A sloth, a donkey, and a curious human. Send a prompt and see what they're doing. One hits a record with a question on his mind. Two brothers pick it up, see what they find. Corn takes his time, Herman's got the facts. Back and forth, they never hold back. My weird prompts, come on in, that's where we begin. My weird prompts, glad you're here.
This episode was generated using artificial intelligence. Please verify facts.
Daniel sent us this one. He's picturing an industrious person with a parking space in a residential building. Proper gate, proper access. Who wants to receive palletized freight without building management? Figuring out they've built an unauthorized commercial loading dock in the car park. The question is, what would it actually take to provision a functional freight unloading facility that looked professional enough for a courier to accept, but temporary enough to dodge detection? It's a stealth logistics problem.
It's a real one. I've been seeing this more and more. People running micro-businesses out of residential buildings, direct-to-consumer wholesale, small-batch manufacturing. They need to receive pallets, but the infrastructure just isn't there. Your options are rent commercial space, which kills the economics at small scale, or figure out a workaround. Daniel's asking about the workaround.
What does it actually take to turn a parking space into a functional receiving area? Let's start with the basics.
The first thing you need to understand is the physical infrastructure. A standard loading dock isn't just a parking spot with ambition. The dock height for a typical box truck is 48 to 52 inches above grade. For smaller straight trucks, you're looking at 36 to 42 inches. Your residential parking space? It's at grade. That height differential is the fundamental problem. You've got a truck bed hovering 4 feet above your concrete, and you need to bridge that gap safely.
You're not just parking a truck. You're creating a transition between two surfaces at completely different elevations.
You need a dock plate or a ramp to do it. Portable aluminum dock plates are the move here. They're rated anywhere from 6,000 to 20,000 pounds, and critically, they can be stored vertically against a wall when you're not using them. That's the stealth component. A permanent concrete dock screams commercial operation. A dock plate you pull out of a utility closet 10 minutes before the truck arrives? That's just a person with some heavy-duty equipment.
What's the weight we're actually talking about? A standard pallet load.
A standard pallet jack handles 5,000 pounds. You don't need electric. Electric is more conspicuous. It needs charging. It makes noise. A manual pallet jack is quiet, simple, and when it's leaned against the wall, it looks like exactly what it is. A piece of material handling equipment that doesn't obviously belong in a residential garage, but also doesn't scream, "I'm running a warehouse."
Which brings us to the pallet jack's dirty secret. Everyone assumes it's the hero of this story.
The pallet jack needs a smooth, level surface, the transition from the truck bed across the dock plate to the ground. If there's a crack, a slope, uneven pavement, the load can tip or the jack gets stuck. And a stuck pallet jack with a ton of product on it is not something you want to explain to the building manager who's just popped down to check on a noise complaint. The surface has to be clean, level, and the dock plate has to be rated for the load. You can't cheap out here. A bent dock plate is a one-way ticket to getting caught.
There was a case I read about. A micro-business in a Chicago condo building. The owner used a portable aluminum dock plate rated for 6,000 pounds, stored it in a utility closet, and set up collapsible traffic cones with reflective tape to mark the receiving zone. The whole setup went up in under 10 minutes and came down just as fast. The courier saw a prepared space with yellow markings and cones. It looked legitimate. That's the visual language of a loading dock.
That's the key insight. Couriers are not inspecting your operation. They're looking for cues. Yellow safety markings, wheel chocks, a dock plate stored nearby, maybe a sign that says receiving area. These are all signals that say this is a place where freight happens. The courier sees the signals, checks the mental box, and unloads. They're not running a compliance audit.
The theater of legitimacy.
But let's talk about the gate and access problem, because this is where a lot of people get tripped up. A standard residential parking gate is 8 to 10 feet wide. That's fine for cars. But a 53-foot trailer? The turning radius requires about 40 feet of clear space behind the parking spot to back in straight. If your gate is too narrow, or the approach is angled, or there's a pillar in the way, the driver is not going to attempt it. They'll mark it as inaccessible and drive off.
You need to measure your approach before you even think about ordering a dock plate.
You need to measure everything. The width of the gate, the depth of the parking space, the height clearance. Some residential garages have pipes or ductwork that hang low enough to clip a tall load. And the 40-foot clearance behind the spot isn't a suggestion. That's the minimum for a 53-foot trailer to straighten out. If you've got a smaller straight truck, you can get away with less. But you need to know what kind of truck your freight company uses before you can determine if your space works.
This circles back to something Daniel mentioned in his prompt. You can't just assume any pickup point will consider being an option. The courier's dispatcher has to have your location flagged as a valid delivery point.
This is the single most important factor in the entire operation. You can have the perfect physical setup, dock plate, cones, chocks, the works, but if the freight company's system doesn't have your address listed as a valid delivery point, the truck never shows up. You have to call the freight company ahead of time and confirm they'll accept what's called a ground-level dock or ramp unloading. Some companies will, some won't. The ones that will need to note it in their dispatch system. Without that flag, you're just a guy with some equipment in a parking space.
You've got the hardware sorted. But the real challenge isn't the equipment. It's the operational dance of making this work without getting caught.
Let's talk about the workflow. The delivery window is everything. You coordinate with the courier, get a specific time, ideally a 2-hour window, and you have the space fully set up before the truck arrives. That means the dock plate is in position, the cones are out, the wheel chocks are visible, and you're standing there looking like someone who receives freight for a living. The driver backs in, drops the pallet, you sign for it, and the moment the truck clears the gate, you start breaking down. Everything gets stored. The space goes back to being a parking spot.
The timing matters for another reason. Scheduling deliveries during off-peak hours, early morning, late evening, reduces the number of neighbors who might notice a 53-foot trailer squeezing through the gate.
Building management is the real adversary here, not because they're malicious, but because recurring large trucks are hard to hide. Security cameras, concierge desks, nosy neighbors. Someone's going to notice that every Tuesday at 7 a.m., a freight truck shows up and you're out there with a pallet jack. The mitigation is to vary the schedule if possible, keep the setup and tear down fast, and never, ever leave pallets or shrink wrap in the parking space overnight.
The golden rule of stealth. Everything must be storable in under 10 minutes. If you can't pack up the entire setup and make the space look like a normal parking spot within 10 minutes of the delivery, you're going to get caught.
I'd aim for 5. The dock plate goes vertical against the wall, the cones collapse and go into a storage bin, the pallet jack tucks into a corner or a storage locker. If you're using a storage unit elsewhere in the building, even better, the equipment never stays in the parking area. The goal is that if building management walks through 5 minutes after the truck leaves, they see nothing but a parked car.
Let's talk about what tips them off. What are the telltale signs?
Pallets are the number one giveaway. A stack of wooden pallets leaning against the wall of a residential parking garage is a billboard that says, "Commercial Activity. You need a plan for pallet disposal." Some freight companies will take the pallet back with them if you ask. Otherwise, you're breaking it down and disposing of it off-site. Shrink wrap is another one. It accumulates fast and it's distinctive. You need to bag it and remove it immediately.
The visual signature of a loading dock is actually quite specific when you break it down. Yellow striping on the floor or on removable mats. A dock plate, even stored vertically, is recognizable. Traffic cones with reflective tape. The trick is that all of these can be temporary. None of them need to be bolted down.
That's your plausible deniability. If building management asks, you're not running a commercial operation. You're receiving some heavy items for a personal project. The equipment is for convenience. The key is to never admit to running a business. Once you say the word business, you've triggered every commercial activity clause in your lease.
Which brings us to the legal side. Most residential leases explicitly prohibit commercial activity. And a pallet jack injury in a parking garage, that's a liability nightmare.
You need to check your lease. If you get caught and there's a clear prohibition, you had zero leverage. Some leases have vague language about business use. Others are explicit. If yours is explicit, you're operating at your own risk. And liability insurance, most personal policies, won't cover injuries related to freight handling. If the pallet jack tips and someone gets hurt, you could be personally on the hook.
There's a famous case from a New York City co-op. A resident was receiving weekly palletized shipments of artisanal soap ingredients. The co-op board discovered it, threatened eviction. The resident argued it was a personal hobby, not a business, and managed to avoid eviction, but had to stop receiving freight entirely. The personal hobby defense worked once, barely, but it didn't save the operation.
That case is instructive because it shows the ceiling of plausible deniability. Weekly pallets of soap ingredients, that's hard to explain as a hobby. But if you're receiving once a month, and the shipments are varied, and you're not storing commercial quantities of anything visible, you've got a better argument. The frequency is what kills you. A semi-regular delivery of heavy personal items is one thing. A weekly standing order from a wholesale distributor is another.
The escalation path matters. What do you actually say when building management knocks?
You've got three lines of defense. First, the equipment is for personal storage. You're reorganizing, you bought some heavy shelving units, you needed the pallet jack to move things. Second, the deliveries are for a hobby. You're into woodworking, or you're restoring furniture, or you're building a home gym. Third, the space is being used temporarily. You're helping a friend, it's a one-time thing, you'll be done soon. The common thread is that none of these admit to commercial activity. You're just an enthusiastic hobbyist with unusually heavy deliveries.
The enthusiastic hobbyist defense. It's the freight equivalent of, I'm not a chef, I just really like cooking.
It works because most building managers don't want a confrontation. If you're polite, you're not causing damage, and you have a plausible story, they'll often let it slide, at least the first time. The second time, they start documenting. The third time, you get a formal notice, so you need to manage the frequency and the visibility.
Let's talk about equipment storage. You mentioned a utility closet. What if you don't have one?
A storage locker in the building is ideal. Many residential buildings have storage units available for rent. If yours does, that's where the dock plate, pallet jack, cones, and signs live. The parking space itself stays clean. If you don't have a storage locker, you're looking at keeping the equipment in your apartment, which is its own logistical challenge. A pallet jack in an elevator is a conversation starter you don't want.
A pallet jack in a residential elevator is the freight equivalent of wearing a wetsuit to a board meeting. Technically, you're clothed, but everyone has questions.
Some of those questions get asked to building management. So the storage problem is actually one of the hardest parts of this whole setup. The equipment is bulky, it's industrial looking, and moving it through common areas creates exposure. If you have a ground floor unit with direct garage access, you're in much better shape. If you're on the 12th floor and the elevator has a security camera, every trip is a risk.
What about the pallet itself? Once it's unloaded, you've got a 48 by 40 inch wooden platform sitting in your parking space.
You break it down immediately. A reciprocating saw, a crowbar, whatever it takes. The wood goes into your vehicle and gets disposed of off-site. Some people keep the pallets for projects. That's actually a decent cover story if anyone asks. I'm building a pallet wall, or I'm making pallet furniture. It's trendy enough to be believable, and it explains why you'd have pallets without admitting to commercial activity.
The pallet furniture alibi. It's the, I'm not running a business, I'm just extremely committed to rustic home decor defense.
It works because it's a real thing people do. Pinterest is full of it. If building management sees you breaking down pallets and loading the wood into your car, you're just a DIY enthusiast with an unusual hobby. The key is to actually have some pallet furniture visible somewhere. A coffee table, a planter, or something. Build it once, keep it around, and it's your cover story in physical form.
Let's circle back to the dock plate for a moment. You mentioned weight ratings, 6,000 to 20,000 pounds. What's the actual difference in cost and portability?
A 6,000-pound aluminum dock plate is lighter, cheaper, and easier to store. You can probably maneuver it yourself. A 20,000-pound plate is substantially heavier. You might need two people to move it, which doubles your exposure. For most micro-business applications, 6,000 pounds is plenty. A standard pallet of consumer goods isn't going to exceed that. The higher ratings are for industrial equipment, heavy machinery, that kind of thing.
You said smooth and level, but most parking garages have a slight slope for drainage.
That's a real problem. Even a 1 or 2% slope can cause a loaded pallet jack to roll, and once it starts rolling, stopping it is not trivial. You need to chalk the wheels, and you need to be aware of the slope direction. If the slope runs toward the truck, you're fighting gravity while unloading. If it runs away from the truck, the pallet jack wants to roll into the garage. Neither is ideal. The best case scenario is a relatively flat spot near the gate.
You're not just looking for any parking space. You're looking for the flattest parking space with the straightest approach and the widest gate clearance.
Ideally, one that's not directly under a security camera. But that's a luxury. The real constraint is the approach. If the truck can't back in straight, nothing else matters. You need that 40 feet of clear space behind the spot. If there's a wall, a pillar, another parked car, the driver is going to take one look and keep driving.
What about smaller trucks? You mentioned straight trucks with lower dock heights.
A straight truck, about 26 feet long, no articulated trailer, has a dock height of 36 to 42 inches. That's still a significant drop, but it's more manageable, and the turning radius is much tighter. You might get away with 25 to 30 feet of clearance instead of 40. If you're going to attempt this, a straight truck is your best bet, but you need to specify that when you're arranging freight. Not all carriers will accommodate the request.
The gate itself, 8 to 10 feet wide, is that enough?
For a straight truck, probably. For a 53-foot trailer, it's tight. The trailer is 8.5 feet wide, so an 8-foot gate gives you negative clearance. A 10-foot gate gives you about 9 inches on each side. That's doable for an experienced driver, but it's not comfortable. And if the gate is at an angle to the street, the effective width is even narrower.
You're asking a truck driver to thread a needle with a vehicle, the length of a bowling lane.
Some drivers will do it, and some won't. The ones who will are the ones who've been doing this for 20 years and have seen worse. The ones who won't are the ones who don't want to explain to their dispatcher why they scraped a trailer against a residential gate. You're at the mercy of the individual driver's risk tolerance.
Which brings us back to the dispatcher. You said the location needs to be flagged as a valid delivery point. How do you actually have that conversation?
You call the freight company's customer service line. You say you need to arrange a delivery to a residential address with a ground-level dock. You explain that you have a dock plate and a pallet jack, and the space is prepared for unloading. Some companies will say no immediately. Their insurance doesn't cover residential unloading. Others will say yes, but require a liftgate truck, which adds cost. A liftgate is basically a hydraulic platform that lowers the pallet from the truck bed to the ground. It eliminates the need for a dock plate, but it's slower and more expensive.
A liftgate truck solves the height problem, but creates a visibility problem. A truck with a liftgate sitting outside a residential building for 20 minutes is more conspicuous than a standard box truck that unloads in 5.
That's the trade-off. The liftgate is safer and doesn't require a dock plate, but it takes longer and is more obvious. If stealth is your priority, you want the standard truck and your own dock plate. The unloading is faster, and the truck looks like any other delivery vehicle. The liftgate is a visual announcement that something heavy is being delivered.
The visual signature of the operation is something I don't think people consider enough. It's not just the equipment in the parking space. It's the truck itself, the duration of the stop, the noise, the activity. A 5-minute unload with a standard truck looks like a furniture delivery. A 20-minute liftgate operation looks like a commercial move.
Neighbors notice the difference. A quick drop-off is forgettable. A prolonged operation with hydraulic winding and a pallet sitting on a liftgate, that's memorable. People remember it when building management sends around a memo asking about unusual activity in the garage.
Let's talk about the escalation path when, not if, building management finds out. You mentioned 3 lines of defense. Walk me through the actual conversation.
The knock comes. Building manager says they've noticed some large deliveries. You say, oh yeah, I've been doing some home renovation, ordered some heavy materials, I've got a pallet jack to move things around. Is there a problem? You're immediately framing it as personal, temporary, and non-commercial. The manager might say it's unusual. You agree. It is unusual. It's a one-time project. You're almost done. You apologize for any inconvenience. You offer to schedule any remaining deliveries at a time that's convenient for them.
You're managing the relationship, not arguing a lease.
You're not citing clauses or making legal arguments. You're being a reasonable person with an unusual but temporary situation. Most building managers will work with that. What they won't work with is someone who says, I have a right to receive deliveries. It's my parking space. Mind your own business. That's how you get a formal lease violation notice.
It implies the situation is finite, which makes it easier for them to let it slide.
If you're smart, you actually do wind it down for a while after that conversation. Let the heat dissipate. Reschedule deliveries for a few weeks out. When you resume, be even more discreet. The goal is to never have the second conversation.
What about the insurance question? You mentioned personal liability policies might not cover freight handling.
Most personal liability policies cover accidents in your home or on your property, but they may have exclusions for business activities. If you're moving a pallet of inventory for your microbusiness and the pallet jack tips and injures someone, the insurance company could deny the claim on the grounds that it was commercial activity. That leaves you personally liable for medical bills, lost wages, pain, and suffering, the whole package.
The personal hobby defense isn't just for building management. It's also for your insurance company.
If it comes to that, yes. But the better strategy is to never have an accident in the first place. Use proper equipment. Don't overload the pallet jack, keep the area clear, and never rush. Most pallet jack accidents happen because someone is hurrying or the surface is uneven. If you're methodical and careful, you can reduce the risk substantially.
Let's pivot to something Daniel's prompt touches on indirectly. The professional appearance. What actually makes a space look like a legitimate dock to a courier?
It's a combination of visual cues, yellow safety markings. You can get removable tape or mats with yellow and black hazard striping. Wheel chocks, bright orange or yellow, placed visibly near the truck's wheels. A dock plate. Even if it's portable, it should look substantial and well-maintained. A sign, something simple like receiving or loading zone, printed on a removable magnetic sheet or a folding A-frame. Cones with reflective tape marking the perimeter.
It's the set design of logistics.
The courier has seen hundreds of loading docks. They know what one looks like at a glance. If your space has the right visual vocabulary, they don't stop to think about whether it's a real dock. They just unload. The cognitive shortcut works in your favor.
The uncanny valley of freight reception. If it looks 90% right, the 10% that's wrong triggers suspicion. But if it looks 80% right and you're confident about it, they fill in the gaps.
If you're standing there in a high-vis vest with a clipboard, looking like you do this every day, the driver is not going to question whether the parking space is zoned for commercial receiving. They're going to hand you the bill of lading and start unloading.
The high-vis vest is a nice touch. It's the freight equivalent of carrying a ladder. Nobody questions why you're there.
It's cheap. $20 for a vest, $10 for a clipboard, and suddenly you're not a resident receiving a suspiciously large delivery. You're the receiving manager of a very small, oddly located warehouse.
Let's boil this down to what someone actually needs to do if they're going to try this.
Step 1, measure everything. The parking space dimensions, height, width, depth, the gate width and height. The clearance behind the spot, you need at least 40 feet for a full trailer, less for a straight truck. The surface slope, you want as flat as possible. Step 2, verify that a truck can actually access the space. If the approach is angled or obstructed, nothing else matters.
Step 3. Acquire the equipment. A portable aluminum dock plate rated for your expected load. 6,000 pounds is probably sufficient, and it's light enough to move solo. A manual pallet jack. 5,000 pound capacity. Quiet. Simple. Wheel chocks. Collapsible traffic cones with reflective tape. A removable sign. And yellow safety markings. Tape or mats. And a high-vis vest, because theater matters.
Step 4. Arrange storage. A utility closet, a storage locker, or your apartment if you have direct garage access. The equipment should never live in the parking space. Step 5. Call the freight company and get your location flagged as a valid delivery point. Confirm they'll accept ground-level dock or ramp unloading. If they require a liftgate, factor in the cost and the visibility trade-off.
Step 6. Schedule deliveries during off-peak hours. Early morning or late evening. Vary the day and time if possible. Step 7. Set up the space no more than 15 minutes before the truck arrives, and break it down within 10 minutes of the truck leaving. Never leave pallets, shrink wrap, or equipment in the parking space.
Step 8. Have your cover story ready. You're renovating. You're a hobbyist. You're helping a friend move heavy equipment. The story should be boring, temporary, and non-commercial. Practice saying it casually. If building management asks, you're mildly embarrassed about the inconvenience, not defensive about your rights.
The single most important factor in all of this, you said it earlier, is the dispatcher flag. Without that, you've got a very expensive set of equipment and no deliveries.
Nothing happens without the flag. The physical setup is necessary but not sufficient. The dispatcher is the gatekeeper. If they won't approve the location, you're not receiving freight, period. So that phone call is step one, not step five. Make it before you buy anything.
Is this a clever workaround or a ticking time bomb? Let's wrap up with some final thoughts.
I think it's both. The engineering is sound. You can absolutely receive palletized freight in a residential parking space with the right equipment and preparation. The operational challenges are manageable if you're disciplined about setup, teardown, and scheduling. The real variable is the human factor: building management, neighbors, the individual truck driver's willingness to attempt the approach.
The trend line here is interesting. More people are running microbusinesses from home. The infrastructure gap between what people need and what residential buildings provide is real. Eventually, buildings will have to adapt, either by explicitly banning freight deliveries and enforcing it, or by creating shared loading facilities for residents. The current gray zone can't last forever.
If you're going to operate in that gray zone, you need to be smart about it. The people who get caught are the ones who get comfortable. They leave the dock plate out. They let pallets accumulate. They schedule deliveries at the same time every week. The people who stay under the radar are the ones who treat every delivery like a special operation. Precise, fast, and invisible the moment it's done.
If you're not prepared to treat it that way, don't start. The cost of getting caught isn't just losing the ability to receive freight, it's potentially losing your lease.
That's the sobering part. But for the right person, someone who's detail-oriented, disciplined, and willing to invest in the equipment and the process, it's a solvable problem. Daniel's scenario isn't fantasy. It's just logistics with a side of theater.
Now, Hilbert's daily fun fact.
In the 1950s, scientists discovered that sharks can detect electric fields as weak as 5 billionths of a volt per centimeter, making them the most electrically sensitive animals on Earth. The ampullae of Lorenzini, the sensory organs responsible, are so precise that a shark can locate prey buried in sand purely by sensing the faint bioelectric signals of a heartbeat.
5 billionths of a volt.
I'm just glad I'm not a flounder in the Atacama. This has been My Weird Prompts. If you enjoyed this episode, tell a friend who's ever wondered what their parking space is really worth. You can find us at myweirdprompts.com or email the show@myweirdprompts.com. For Herman Poppleberry, I'm Corn. We'll catch you next time.
This episode's script was written by DeepSeek V4 Pro, with text-to-speech by Chatterbox.
Thanks for listening to our show, My Weird Prompts, where odd thoughts go. From sloth slow takes to facts on cue, we chase the strange and follow through. Some nights it's news, some nights it's lore, a thought you've never heard before. The hosts dig in, the hosts dig deep. The stranger the prompt, the less they sleep. From tiny questions, big ones too. From half-formed hunches to deja vu. If something odd is in your head, send it in, we'll chase the thread. My weird prompts, that's the close. From sloth, from man, from long-eared host. My weird prompts, until next time. Stay curious, keep weird in mind.